This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at Dicetower.com.
And welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 152.
This is an episode long in the making. I feel like we haven't sat down to do a proper episode of the Family Gamers Podcast in a long time.
Like a month.
It really feels like it's been a long time. We have been crazy. We are in the new Family Gamers HQ now.
Family Gamers Studio.
New look, Family Gamers Studio. Yeah, I did the pilgrimage to IKEA today to buy some Kallax. We'll talk about that a little bit later. You went to a convention. We talked a little bit after that. I've been to a convention. We haven't talked about that at all yet. There is a ton of stuff that we are going to talk about on this episode, Con and Recon, the Family Gamers Podcast.
What's going on, Recon?
That is a shout out to anybody who played the old school Amplitude right there.
Yes, it is.
All right. But first, we want to take a minute to thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, Breaking Games. They have an exciting game that's on Kickstarter, Dwellings of Eldervale.
You are excited for this.
It's a really, like, epic, tons of dudes on a map, lots of minis, crazy-looking game.
Cool.
So, I don't think we're going to play that with our kids. It's kind of a little bit ahead of our kids. But we do play a bunch of games with our kids from Breaking Games. Sparkle Kitty is one. We also play The Stars Align.
And Order of Invention.
Mm-hmm. These are two fantastic games from Breaking Games that are really just wonderful. Totally different ends of the spectrum. The Stars Align is a two-player game. It's a nice, calm game. Reminds us a little bit of like Go or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. Order of Invention is a little bit more of a party game where a bunch of people are trying to figure out what things were invented in what orders.
Every time I come back to it, I like how Order of Invention makes you think and work, but usually most people, if they know when something was invented out of the four items currently available, they only know one or maybe two, and that is not enough to do well.
Totally, and it's always super interesting to find out when these things were made, because you find something and say, I had no idea that this thing was invented 30 years before I thought it was, you know, popular.
Or, you know, man, I can't imagine life without this. It was only invented in the 70s?
I know.
Really?
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. So that's Order of Invention from Breaking Games. Thank you so much to Breaking Games for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. Hey, Nitra.
Hey, Andrew.
I mentioned a bunch of con stuff. We also have some back talk this week.
Yeah.
And we have some stuff to give away. Our contest has ended. Our episode 150 contest is over. And we have selected five winners?
One and one and three, yes.
I'm pumped. It's going to be a great show.
Yeah.
So let's get right into it.
Well, let's start by talking about just a few games that we've been playing lately.
Yeah, let's do games that we have been playing not at conventions.
Not related to conventions. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. So, today I play Ticket to Ride New York. I love that game. It's nice and short. I had, an errand to run to our local IKEA. And I didn't want to get too involved in something, but Asher really wanted to play something because he wasn't feeling well this morning, so we couldn't go to church. So we played Ticket to Ride New York. I still like that game.
Yeah, it was cool.
The point spread was really tight. It was 31, 32, and 35.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's good. It scratches the Ticket to Ride itch for me. You know, Ticket to Ride is kind of a gateway game. It's really my go-to gateway game. I'm not really a Catan guy, but it can be a little bit of an investment time-wise. And I love this game because it scratches the itch. It gets kind of, okay, I've played Ticket to Ride. I can put it aside for 6 months or whatever it is. But it doesn't take, you know, an hour and a half to play a game. I love playing Ticket to Ride. I just need to be in the right headspace if I'm going to commit that amount of time to it.
Agreed. Working backwards for me, my father and his wife were here visiting for a day or two while our big kids were away at camp. Mm-hmm. So our now five-year-old kept looking for things that he could do to get the adults' attention away from each other and onto him.
Right. That's so shocking. I'm sure that everybody listening to the show is saying, what? My five-year-old
can't believe
doesn't do
it.
That? Yeah. What an obnoxious child.
But at one point, we have been reorganizing the shelves because, as mentioned, Family Gamers Headquarters is moving. I had finally taken down off the shelf our copy of Suspend Junior, which has been sitting way out of reach. He pulled it out because he was trying to get my dad's attention, but we've actually played with it several times now in the last couple of days, because that's a fun game. The more I play it, the more I think that the original Suspend is probably a slightly superior game. Mm-hmm. But again, if you have 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds who like to turn every metal stick into a weapon or a musical instrument, Suspend Junior is superior because the only sticks are the stand and everything else is plastic. Right. That's bendy.
Yep, they're all bendy. It's a fun little game. I mean, I think it's easier than regular Suspend because
I mean a little bit.
Well, there's more friction on the pieces, so you sure kind of let me put it to you like this: I have never played regular Suspend and been able to put literally every single piece in the game on the thing
on and eventually,
yeah. And we did that, and then Asher actually was playing around with it on his own today and did it,
and
again.
He did it too. We've also been playing some Constellations in preparation for the review that we've got coming out real soon.
Mm-hmm. Probably tomorrow, I think.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun little game. I love the glow in the dark pieces. I mean, how many games do you have? How many board games do you have where you have glow in the dark pieces?
Yes.
So that's really neat.
Overall, it's a pretty solid game, mm-hmm. and I love the educational aspect to it.
You know, I've talked a lot about games like World's Fair 1893, where the flavor text really kind of teaches you stuff. I think this game goes one step further, but they still manage to not get in the way of the game. And that is so yes. important to me. I don't want an edutainment game. I just don't want that in my game. But with this, literally more than half of the rule book is just like interesting, cool stuff about stargazing and star facts and different kinds of stars and how long they live and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. And on top of that, there's also stuff as flavor text on the cards themselves.
On the star cards, yeah.
And one other thing that I realized as we were playing the game is the cost that you pay in star cards to build a constellation, the actual cost of a constellation is actually the same as the type of stars and the number of stars that are in the constellations.
So I did a little research, and I'm not sure it's exactly a one-to-one correlation, but it's very, very close.
I mean, it's probably the best they could reasonably do.
Right? It's definitely based on, well, and think about the fact that constellations are somewhat fluid things. Mm-hmm. We can say, oh, hey, you know, now with better technology, we can see this star, and it would technically be part of this constellation. But if you can't see it with the naked eye, is it really part of that constellation?
Right, right, right. It's the spirit of the constellation, not the letter of the constellation.
Right, exactly.
So that'll be coming out in the next couple of days. Definitely check that out. That is a game that was also co-designed by Dr. Dante Loretta, who we've had on the show, and we've reviewed one of his other games.
For the 4th of July, you were gone. I tried to talk the kids into, you know, let's play something that's at least marginally related to the holiday that we're celebrating. And we did that with Rolling America.
Okay.
And also with Battle Sheep, because they convinced me that playing with Red Sheep, White Sheep, and Blue Sheep would be sufficiently patriotic.
Okay. I mean, I like the way they think. Yeah. I thought you were going to go with like 10 Days in the USA or something like that.
I suggested lots of different possible ones, as sure. well as Lantern's Dice, mm-hmm. which we'll talk more about later, I'm sure, because you're making fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the two that we ended up with.
I mean, I think that's fair. Let's see. Going back, we played right before I left a lot of Quacks of Quedlinburg and the Grim Masquerade.
Yes.
So we shoehorned the Grim Masquerade in between Origins and Dice Tower Con because you picked it up at Origins, fell in love with it.
Yes.
And I signed up, knowing that you were bringing it home, to teach it at Dice Tower Con. So we played a bunch of the Grim Masquerade. I know that game pretty well now. I still never played it with special powers.
That's fine. Someday we'll decide that maybe it's not enough and we need to add special powers. But for
I think we should just add them just to find out how the game is, really.
Maybe.
Okay.
I like all the layers of extra things you can do in
mm-hmm.
that game.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
keeps it interesting.
The Grim Masquerade and Quacks of Quedlinburg. That game, I really like it. I still like it. I still like it a lot.
Yep.
And the guy who was supposed to bring the Herb Witches did not bring the Herb Witches, so I did not get to play with the expansion. But still have the game. Herb Witches is coming out of Gen Con. It's probably going to be on a Christmas list.
Well, and you know what else? Importantly, our kids like the Quacks of Quedlinburg,
that's
so
true.
We can keep playing it, and we can keep trying out the different combinations of books.
Right. So there's all the different book combinations, which increases replayability. We can also flip our player boards over and do the second drop stuff.
Oh, yeah. Asher really wants to do that.
Yeah. So there's a lot of options that are out there.
One last shout out that I will give. Dirty Pig, which is a game that I picked up for review at Origins, and for which we've already done a review at this point, because we played it a ton. I actually brought with us to a outdoor concert slightly before the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. Friends had invited us. And once again, Elliot, the 5-year-old, insisted that we play it while all of the big kids were running around and like kicking a soccer ball around and stuff. And we played 3 or 4 games in a row, mostly at his insistence, because he was like, let's play again.
Well, I mean,
but it was perfect for that setting. We were on a, you know, picnic blanket in the middle of the park, and he didn't have a whole lot else to do, and the adults were willing to humor him, and we had fun.
I mean, it's the right level for a 5-year-old, right? He gets the, like, 5 or 6 fundamental mechanics of the game,
yeah,
and he can play it, and that's really all there is to it, and it's easy.
And among adults, it's a silly take-that kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
And importantly, in that little case it's got, it's really, really portable and somewhat weatherproof, so this would be a great game to stash in the car, even if you have a bunch of messy children.
Right. I mean, who has messy children? Certainly not us.
No, of course not.
Not us. Not at all. Well, I'm looking at my list, and the other, like, 30 games on it are either games that I played at Dice Tower Con or games that I brought home from Dice Tower Con and we played at home. So I think I'm pretty much out of games that I have played outside of Dice Tower Con.
That's all right. We can keep this section relatively short, and I know you all want to hear about Andrew's experiences at Dice Tower Con and my experiences at Origins.
Great. Oh, and I want to thank everybody for not sending us anything creepy for me to eat yet. I appreciate that, by the way.
You should totally do that, though.
Yeah. If you don't know what I'm talking about, listen to episode 150. You'll know.
Speaking of you, our listeners, we have some back talk.
We do. We won't take it from our kids,
but we'll take it from you.
All right. So let's talk about some back talk. All right. So first, some back talk from Michael. I've actually met Michael at Dice Tower Con. Let's see. So Michael emailed us to let us know about Brain Chase, which is a 5-week online adventure for kids to solve a mystery and locate a real hidden treasure. You can go to brainchase.com/the-treasure-hunt.
It looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's super cool that you're actually competing to find the location of a real treasure that really exists in the world.
I mean, that's almost like what dreams are made of, right? Like, that's a really, really cool thing that
they
get to do.
They basically say in the thing that if you're one of the first people to figure out the location, they will fly you to the location and you get to physically experience digging up the treasure.
That's crazy.
Which is pretty cool.
It is. It totally is. So thank you very much, Michael, for letting us know about that. He emailed us because he was checking out the podcast after he met me at Dice Tower Con and he heard us talk about the Clever Kids Mysteries.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Thanks so much for listening. And we hope to hear from you again soon.
We have a fairly new fan in Seth Overdeer. I met him at Origins.
Okay, awesome.
Because he was already a fan of the One Board family, who I was hanging out with.
Sure.
Now he's a fan of ours, too. Thanks, Seth. And he shared to our Facebook group that Origins is, quote, the best convention of them all.
You know, I haven't been to Origins, but I had a really good time last week.
And your mileage may vary?
Yeah, sure. So, but I'm welcome, Seth. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for sharing your feedback. Maybe I'll get to experience Origins sometime.
All right.
I know Anitra came home happy. That's all I can say.
It was a good time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you to all the other people who have talked to us or communicated with us on social media. We actually got a tweet today from somebody that I literally ran into at IKEA.
Of course you did.
I mean, it's what I do, I guess. As we mentioned, I went to IKEA to pick up some Kallax stuff. I was looking at Kallaxes, and where else do you meet board game people than looking at Kallaxes at IKEA? So somebody made a mention, husband and wife were talking, and somebody made a mention about what kinds of odd-shaped games would fit in different places. I mean, hardcore, had out a measuring tape. It was awesome.
You found your people.
But I found my people, and I was like, oh, you should check out our podcast. And the guy was like, oh, I've heard of you. And we got to talking, and he was actually in the audience during the Flip Floory Super Saturday Board Game Serial versus Family Gamers Granite Game Summit.
Live show. Oh, awesome.
And so that was a lot of fun. I'm so glad that I got to run into him. It was cool. I wish I had buttons or something with me, and I didn't have anything because I'm a failure. But it was a lot of fun to meet somebody in the wild who knew who we were. So that was cool.
Cool.
I really want to give some stuff away, so why don't we do this? We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to announce the winners of all of our giveaways.
All right, sounds like a plan.
All right, we'll be right back.
Mmm,
Holy chocolate lava cake. I love eating baked goods. But Claire, my daughter, loves making baked goods. This is a snap review for Filler, a game by Jonathan Chaffer and published by Green Couch Games. Filler is a game for 1-6 players, ages 8 and up, and it plays in about 30 minutes. In Filler, you play as a pastry chef, reporting to work at the bakery. Use your supplies to fill recipes, and may the best baker win. Each round in Filler is called a day. At the beginning of a day, each player chooses a card to represent the time they came to work. This is represented in the upper left-hand corner of the card. Everyone reveals their time cards simultaneously. Then each player takes a turn, starting with the earliest time and ending with the latest time. On your turn, first you discard the time card to your own personal discard pile. Then you either play cards to fill an order, or you restock, which is picking up all of the cards from your discard pile and putting them back in your hand. To fill an order, play at least one card from your hand. Match ingredients from the left side of your played cards to the requirements on the recipe, which are directly underneath the picture of the baked good you'll be making. If all your requirements are met, discard the played cards and add the new recipe to your hand. If you can't or don't want to fill a recipe, then it's time to restock. Pick up all the cards from your discard pile, add them back to your hand. When you're restocking, you can also reserve a recipe by returning it to the top of the draw pile. It'll come out again on the next day. At the end of the day, refill the recipe book with more cards from the deck so that there are always as many recipes as there are players plus one at the beginning of a new day. The game ends when there are not enough cards left in the deck to completely refill the recipe book for the next day. So that's how you play Filler in a nutshell. What's also important is the end game score. At the end of the game, you score 1 point for each victory point symbol on your cards. There are stars, money symbols, and there are trophies. You get an additional 2 points for each set of three different symbols. That is, 2 points for each set of one star, one trophy, and $1 bill. So, I already mentioned my daughter Claire loves baking. She really enjoys Filler. The work theme that you're showing up for work and you're baking these recipes with different ingredients gives it an interesting feel and a different twist from other set collection games and other food-based games, because it's not about consuming the foods that you see, but rather about making them, although they do look delicious. The game does start relatively slowly because each player gets a set of three cards to begin that are not very powerful. It's just enough to allow you to both choose a time and probably also fill a recipe if simple recipes come out at the beginning of the game. We do really like the multi-use cards. Every time you're looking at your hand, you're making a decision. Do I want to play the earliest time? But if I do, then I might lose my best shot for filling the best recipes that are currently out there, since early times also tend to have more rare or more useful ingredients on them. On the flip side, there are other cards that only give you points and don't give you any ingredients whatsoever. However, they may also be useful for picking exactly the kind of time that you want. The special powers on some of the recipe cards add even more interesting things you can do. Some recipe cards have a bonus fill action, so that after you fill that recipe, you are allowed to then turn around and fill another recipe if you're able. Other cards have a bonus restock action. That means as soon as you fill this recipe and add it to your hand, you also get to restock and add all of your discarded cards back into your hand. These cards are hotly contested and everybody wants them. I personally really enjoyed the solo mode for Filler. So there are 6 different starting decks that you can play with up to 6 players in the standard game. However, each of these starting decks also has a different automated chef personality card that goes with them. This means that playing the solo mode against an automated chef feels very much like playing a 2-player game, and the different automated chefs each have different special powers that they use throughout the game, so there's quite a bit of variety in how it plays in the solo mode, which I really, really appreciate. I also really loved that the choices of colors on the starting decks go a little bit against the norm. The purple and pink decks have pictures of men on them. The orange and blue decks have pictures of women on them. It was a nice, just a little nod to kids like mine, whose boys like pink and girls like blue, and they don't have to feel left out. In addition to the fact that several different nationalities and colors are represented within the people on the cards as well. Overall, we really enjoy filler. It's a fun game. It's not too long, although it does start slowly each time. But no matter how many people we've played it with, it's always over in about half an hour. In two-player or solo mode, it can even go a little faster than that. I highly recommend filler if you're looking for a game that's not difficult to learn, but presents you with interesting and challenging decisions all along the way. Not to mention the fact that this is a small, compact card game that accommodates up to 6 players or all the way down to 1 player, depending on your needs. Our whole family really enjoys filler. It's highly recommended, especially if you have an aspiring baker in your family. I would give filler 4.5 filled cannolis out of 5. And that's filler in a snap.
And we're back!
All right, let's give some stuff away!
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Woohoo!
Giveaway winner!
All right, so we're going to start with, let's see, we will start with our Sagrada promo winners. So we had 3 of these. These are cards from Sagrada. These are promotional cards. They were, I think, given away at Gen Con last year?
I don't know. We have them. We wanted to give them away.
Absolutely. So our 3 winners of these are Joseph Renninger,
Amala Anand,
and Kristen Troska.
Congratulations, guys.
Congratulations to you guys for winning. Woo! Yes, we will get these things in the mail as soon as we hear from you. Good times.
All right.
All right, next, let's give away the Barnyard Roundup playmat.
Drum roll, please. It is Kelly Van Auken, or maybe Van Auken. Congratulations, Kelly.
Either way, you still win the Barnyard Roundup playmat. And the big prize.
The big prize.
We had hundreds of entries for the Munchkin CCG play pack. This is just a pile of Munchkin CCG stuff.
A bunch of starter decks, bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you have been interested in the Munchkin CCG, you will have everything you need.
Right, absolutely.
And then some.
Yep. And so the winner of this is Alexi Dikos. Congratulations! You have won!
Congratulations, Alexi!
All right, so we will be contacting all of you guys and girls via email, and we will get the stuff out to you. We love giving stuff away. Hopefully, we'll have more stuff to give away soon. Thanks for listening to the Family Gamers Podcast.
And now, conventions.
And now, conventions, conventions, conventions.
All the conventions.
Yes. Okay. Do you want to go first? Or how do you want to do this? Here's what I'm going to start with this. So, our episode 148, maybe, was talking about FOMO, fear of missing out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we got to talking about during that episode was kind of our different approaches to how we do cons. You and me, our different approaches. And
yes,
how I really like conventions because all of my favorite publisher people are there. I can talk to all of these folks. I can rub elbows with board game royalty. I don't know if I told you this. I met Daryl Andrews and Adrian Adamescu, who are the creators of Sagrada.
Oh, cool.
I got to talk to them at Dice Tower Con, for example.
Look at you.
And I got to tell them about all the games that I like. At this point, we've played enough games that I can drop the names of games that they created that not a lot of people know. Mm-hmm. And they get really mm-hmm. impressed by that. Or at least I like to think they do. But so we talked about that whole thing about how I really like these conventions because I can talk to people and meet people and do all this stuff. And you really like conventions because you get to sit down and play games that you might not have a chance to play other times.
Yes. I mean, I do like meeting the people, but I get kind of burned out on the people after a couple of days.
Which I understand. I got to be honest with you, by the way. I mean, I flew into Orlando on a Tuesday and I didn't get home until Tuesday. I was like traveled. I was like ready to be home. I was by like Saturday. I was like, you know what? I want to be at my house with Anitra.
Yeah.
So, which isn't to say that I didn't have a great time. But the reason why I bring this up is because, ironically, you went to a convention that had a lot more of a focus on the business side of the board game hobby. And I went to a convention that was way more focused on playing games.
And I had a couple of moments of meeting semi-famous people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to start this right off. Not even board game related, but at Origins Convention, apparently they have an author's track.
Great.
And I was super excited because their headline special guests on the author track were Mercedes Lackey and her husband, Larry Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
Mercedes Lackey is an incredibly prolific fantasy author.
Never heard of her. I'm just kidding.
I think she's literally got over 100 books under her belt.
Like, I mean, that's awesome.
She puts out several every year.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry Dixon is a reasonably well-known science fiction author. So I was super excited. I made sure that I made time on one of my days in between appointments to go see a panel that Mercedes Lackey was on. Discovered a few other local authors. And did my little book nerd geek out thing and bought this year's Origins anthology.
Cool.
And read it for the next week after I got home.
And you're done with it now?
It's going to live on the shelves. Honestly, unlike a lot of other anthologies, I liked every single story in it. So cool. I'm going to hang on to it.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
But then I did look at a lot of games.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with looking at a lot of games.
I mean, that's kind of why I was there.
Right.
So let me just hit a couple of high points that I might not have mentioned before. Although there are several that I remember I mentioned with Nick in episode 150. We've already talked about Shobu. Shobu is cool. You all should look into it. We'll have a review coming in the next month or two. Lanterns Dice, which takes the Lanterns idea and turns it into a roll and write dice game. It's very clever that the way they have a little dice tray so that you're still arranging the four dice the same way you would arrange a four-sided tile in Lanterns. So everybody gets assigned a color. But then because it's a roll and write game, you can actually fill in that color anywhere that it appears on your own individual sheet. And everybody's kind of going for slightly different things and layouts on their sheet. We aired an interview with Pegasus Spiel talking about their Undo series. I probably wouldn't do it with our kids, but it was a really neat idea. Also mentioned with Nick, Die Hard, the Nakatomi Heist.
Game looks so good.
It's going to be good.
I'm excited for that game.
I'm not sure I would play it with the kids because...
I wouldn't play with the kids at all.
Because you're not going to appreciate a lot of what's going on unless you've seen the movie. Dungeon Academy, on the other hand, super excited for when that comes out. I think we're going to like it a lot, although the timed aspect of it makes me a little nervous with our kids.
Okay,
our kids
talk
don't,
about that a little bit.
Don't do well with timed. So in Dungeon Academy, I think we had an interview that we aired in the last episode, but you have 16 dice. They get rolled into this special container that's basically a 4x4 grid. And it's got a lid on it. It represents the academy. So you're putting the roof on and kind of shaking everything down. And then someone removes the roof and everybody simultaneously draws on their paper what they think is going to be the best path through the 4x4 grid that will get them the most points. So there are blue bad guys, red bad guys that come in both big and small varieties. And then there's basically blue potions and red potions, which refill your blue and your red. It's magic and life or something
okay,
like that.
Okay, sure.
And the idea is you want to hit as many guys as you can without ever going below zero on your magic and your life.
So going through a bad guy would represent hitting them, but also draining some of your hit points.
Yes, exactly.
So you're going to want to go through a couple bad guys, hit a couple potions, through a couple bad guys, hit a couple potions.
Right, exactly.
Okay, okay.
And the thing is that there's also a bonus to being the first one to be done.
Sure.
So that's where the time aspect comes in. You know, you could sit there and puzzle out the absolute best path for you, but it's not necessarily going to be worth it if it means that you're last.
Right. Okay.
So it was a really neat idea, kind of turn some of the roll and write concept on its head because, yes, you're rolling dice, but the dice become the playboard.
Right.
Rather than the mechanic. So I am super excited to see that again in a couple of months.
Sure. Sounds fun.
I went over to Calliope and I got to play two games with Ken Franklin and Chris Leader,
mm-hmm.
which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Spy Master, which was this silly kind of game of traveling all over the world and trying to pull enough little spy pawns to complete missions. It was cute. It was fun. And then I got to play a full game of Shipshape.
With, like, basically a production-ready copy.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
It was great. I am super loving that game.
Now, were they selling advanced copies of Shipshape?
No.
At Origin? A Gen Con release, then?
I believe so, yeah.
Cool, cool.
I played a couple of games that are not brand new, but I had never played before. So I got to play The Climbers. Have you seen this one before? It ends up looking like this kind of hodgepodge stack of wooden blocks in a series of five different colors, and then there's little wooden people guys that are climbing up the tower.
Sounds interesting, but no, I don't know anything about it.
It looks super childish, but it has a real depth of strategy. So okay. While you could play it with kids, I'd probably prefer playing it with grown-ups. The idea is that each time when it comes around to your turn, you want to be the king of the hill, basically. You want to get the tallest on the tower. But on your turn, you're either moving horizontally or moving up, but you can only move either on the neutral color, which is sort of this tan, or on your own color. And you can only move up a certain amount. Basically, your little guy, you know, if his head pokes up over where you're trying to move, then you can see there and you can move up. Otherwise, you have a one-time use ladder that you can use to get up a higher distance than that.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the strategy because you're picking blocks up and then you're turning them around to try to get the color that you need in the right place. And if you can't do that, you're at least going to put a color that's going to block somebody else. And it's not really a dexterity game, but there is certainly a dexterity element that you want to place these blocks so that you're not knocking anything over as you go from short and wide to narrow and tall over the course of the game.
Interesting.
It has great table presence, and so I had seen it at a con like a year ago, and I was like, oh, that looks cool, and I didn't have time to take a look at it then.
Sure.
So it was neat. It's from Capstone Games. A few others that have not come up yet in the various times that I've talked about Origins. Floodgate Games had a party game called The Three Laws of Robotics. We're not huge on party games, so I did not look into it, but it seemed exceedingly silly, and I'm a sucker for anything that references Isaac Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics. It's a deduction game that you're trying to figure out what kind of robot you are, while also being forced to follow certain laws that get placed on all of the robots throughout the course of the game.
Okay.
So things like, you must only answer in, you know, single syllables, or you can only point. Really goofy stuff. It was a little mix of everything. A little bit of dexterity, a little bit of just zaniness, and deduction. So, definitely right for certain groups. Not great for our family, which is why I didn't spend a lot of time with it, but it was cute.
Okay.
I got some quick looks at Arch Ravelry that'll be coming from XYZ Games mm-hmm. in the fall,
mm-hmm.
and at the Always Green Garden that is now on Kickstarter from Splattered Inc. They're the folks who did Dauber's Quest. You all should definitely go check out the Kickstarter for Always Green Garden. It's basically a worker placement game at a level accessible for like a 6 or 7 year old kid. But with the kind of twists and turns you would expect since a 7 year old kid was involved in designing it.
Okay.
Really, it's a very interesting looking game, and it's competitive, but in a gentle kind of way that you're trying to make the best recipes and help the garden grow the best and Aww. Attract people over to your thing.
Aw.
So.
It's very Viva Pinata like.
Yeah, kind of. I can't remember if in our previous conversations we talked about Honga, which is the newest big box HABA game. Honga is a action selection game that in typical HABA style is certainly accessible for kids and has a pretty high toy factor to the components, but has some pretty deep strategy going on. It's a great way to teach kids that sometimes you take the action that is a little bit not exactly the action you want because it hurts you the least. There's these little wheels that are divided up into four pie sections, and you place them down on the board in these four areas. The thing is that it means everybody gets to do an action, and if you don't place certain things into the middle, then Honga, the saber-toothed cat, will attack you.
Okay.
So he will attack you and take your stuff.
Nobody likes that.
But in this game, every once in a while, that might be the thing that you want to do, or you might want to force somebody else to do that.
Okay.
So I thought it looked pretty cool. A couple more quick things that I did not have interviews to share with you all about. WizKids has a game called Smash City.
Mm-hmm. I saw it at Dice Tower Con.
Did you?
Yep.
If your family likes Take That games, and if your family likes giant kaiju monsters, you will enjoy Smash City. I ended up sitting down and playing it with a dad and his two teenage daughters. And so the three of them just attacked each other constantly, and I kind of snuck around till near the end, and then they all ganged up on me because they realized I was about to win. But it was good. You have these really big foam dice that represent your monster, and you roll them into the cardboard city. It's actually to your advantage to do things like knock down buildings.
Sure.
Which is pretty great. And then you do, you know, you can attack other players if you have line of sight and things like that. You also get attacked by the military in whatever area of the board you land in.
Makes sense.
So it was pretty neat. Not a great choice for our family. Mm-hmm. But if you like kaiju, this is a good game for you. On the other hand, if you like cats, I looked at a game called Kibble Scuffle. Also from WizKids.
Oh, no.
You are trying to feed all of your cats.
Okay.
They are all fighting for whatever food gets dropped into the communal food bowls. The cats are cards that you're playing from your hand. And the box itself turns into the food dispenser. It's got a little pull-out tab that makes it look just like a box of dry cat food. With a, you know, with a little spout. So you shake out these cubes that are orange, brown, and tan, representing the three kinds of cat food. And then as you take turns, everybody places cat cards around the bowl of their choice. And when a bowl is full, when it hits whatever full is, I think in our game it was five cats, although the fat cat counts as two cats, then all the cats eat. And they take food, you know, in basically seniority order. Sure. Around the bowl. And then they all leave. And more cats come in. It was cute. It's the kind of game where instead of directly attacking people, you kind of just nudge them out a little bit. Or, you know, say, oh, you don't want to be at this bowl. I'm going to make you move over to that other bowl. I really enjoyed that one. And the cute factor was high.
I mean, WizKids is one of those companies that puts out just like tons of games every year to see
tons.
What sticks kind of things.
Tons. I went over to the Cosmos booth, and the coolest thing they had lots of great things, but the coolest thing they had is this set of puzzly games that they're calling Brainwaves.
Mm.
Literally designed by a neuroscientist in combination with a well-known game designer.
That is cool.
Yeah. Specifically to help train different parts of your memory and get it stronger. But it definitely didn't feel like work. It felt like the kind of thing where you're like, I can do this. I can do better next time.
Mm-hmm.
I am super looking forward to those actually coming out in the US. Currently, they're only available in Europe. But they should be coming soon.
We will definitely keep you posted. We have a good relationship with Cosmos, I think. So hopefully we'll be able to get some of those in for review and then tell everybody what we think of them.
Yeah, I thought it was neat. I mean, it's another game where the educational aspect is high, but it's the kind of game that is quote-unquote educational even if you are an adult, even if you know lots of stuff, because it's a brain training exercise rather than a learn facts mm-hmm. kind of exercise. So that's pretty much it, other than my post-con experiences.
Is that it? That's all?
I'm trying to keep it quick, man. I'm not succeeding, but I'm trying.
All right, so why don't we do that? I'm going to talk about some games that I played, and then I think we'll talk about other con-related stuff. What else did we do? What did we think of the con in general? What did we like, not like? Those kinds of things.
And we'll address some questions that we got from folks on the Family Gamers community.
Sounds good. All right, so funny story. I met a guy on the plane down to Dice Tower Con.
Of course you did.
Yeah. He thought it was weird that I was wearing jeans to Florida, and I said I was going to be in a convention hall all week, and he said, are you going to Dice Tower Con? And then I didn't get any work done for the entire flight. So we talked a lot. He's from like one town over from us. I ended up staying at his villa the first night because we were up late playing games and it just was convenient.
It just worked out that way.
Yeah, it just worked out that way. His name is Ben. He will come up later in the story.
Okay.
But while we were there, we played three games. We played a game called Curio. I don't even know if I told you anything about this game.
No.
Curio is a card game. It's got this weird kind of alt-futuristic thing. I don't even know how to really describe it. But
okay.
Essentially, every round, it is a card drafting game, like Sushi Go or something like that. And you are drafting these cards and playing them out on your tableau. And I think the numbers range from 1 to 9. And of each number, there are that many of that card in the deck. Although some are discarded before you start playing.
Okay, and that makes sense.
Yeah, and all of the different cards have different abilities. And I don't want to go into an in-depth kind of explanation of this whole thing. But one of them, the number one, it's like the ultimate one or something like that. And, you know, she breaks ties, right? Or, I don't know, number 8 protects you from what number 6 can do. And number 7 is the banker. So if you have the most of the banker, oh, you get the ability if you have the most of that thing. You know,
okay.
At any time. So as it goes through each person's turn, who has the most of each particular card might change.
Can change. All right.
So if you have the most when it's your turn of, like, the banker, then you get coins, which are functionally equivalent to victory points in the game. And there's all these kinds of crazy cards and effects. And I don't know. I mean, there really isn't a theme to the game, so to speak. Like, it does have this kind of weird alt-futuristic thing. But, I mean, it could be just about anything. Sort of like Capital Lux in that way. But it was an interesting game that we played. We also played Bang the Dice Game, which a lot of people have played, and I had just had somehow never played before.
Yeah, I've heard great things about it.
It was fun. I died first, and it wasn't even close. In the game, there's always a sheriff and a deputy, and everybody else is an outlaw. And so you're rolling these dice to either gain hearts or shoot people or do something else. I don't even remember. And somehow, just the way it worked out, I got shot a lot, and I never rolled life. And so other people were at more life than they started the game with, and I was dead.
Yeah.
So I died pretty quickly, but it was fun to play, and I would definitely play it again. And the third game we played that night was a game called Village Pillage.
I think I've heard of that one.
This is a game from Jelly Bean Games, Peter Hayward. He designed Scuttle and some other stuff. He's the guy with the blue hair. That's how people know Peter Hayward. It's an interesting game. What you are doing in this game, the goal is to purchase 3 artifacts. So everybody has a card that they start with, and it's got these little 3 artifact icons on there. And in order to buy an artifact, you need to have, I think it's 5 food, and then 7 food, and then 9 food. So the first artifact is 5 food, the second artifact is 7, etc. But the way the game works is that you have a hand of cards, and what you do is you put a card face down on either side of you. So you have one on your left hand, one on your right hand, and everybody does this around the table, and you all reveal simultaneously. And so the card in your right hand is possibly doing something based on the person to your right. The card in your left hand is possibly doing something based on the person to your left. You have farming cards, defense cards, and offense cards, and I think there's maybe one other kind of card. And so as you gain some resources, you can use some resources to either buy these artifacts, or you can use some resources to buy other cards so that you have a hand with more options.
And
all the different people have slightly different abilities. And sometimes you're attacking the person on your right or your left, and you're taking food from them instead of farming to get food of your own. Sometimes you're defending, and some of the defensive stuff will allow you to actually also take food or take coins or these kinds of things so that you can buy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of this interesting, almost chess match around the table as you're trying to guess what other people are going to be playing so that you can play cards that'll really... It's not so much about affecting the other people as it is about benefiting yourself. But if you think someone's going to attack, you might want to play a defensive card because that might actually help you and also protect your stuff and things like that. So Village Pillage was interesting. It was another game that was pretty fun to play. It went quickly. Definitely need to be a reader to play that game. And it can get a little... I don't want to say take that-ish, but if you keep attacking, I mean, it can get a little obnoxious after a while, right?
Sure.
And then on Wednesday, I played a game that I think you mentioned on episode 150, which was Bricks from Stronghold Games. I really like this game. This is a roll and write where you are drawing basically Tetris pieces onto more or less a Tetris board. And I think Stephen Bonnicourt talked about it in the interview that we did for...
Yes.
The Origins interview show. And in this game, you can expend energy to not really move pieces, but like rotate pieces or things like that. But the goal essentially is to fill this Tetris board by drawing in these pieces based on what you roll. When you roll the dice, you roll a color and you roll a number, and those correlate on a grid to the piece that's dropping down. And that piece has to get drawn on your board. You have 3 bombs that you get victory points for not using. But those will allow you to blow up pieces if you're like, I can't use this piece. I just want to blow it up. Mm-hmm. Or you can use some energy, and there's ways to get energy in the game in order to shift the token To the left or to the right. So if you don't like what you're on, but there's something next to it, like when you roll the dice, if you don't like what the token is on the cross section where the token lands, but something to the left or to the right of it is something that you might be able to use, you can use energy to move that token just for yourself and draw that other piece instead.
Cool.
So that was Bricks. I really liked it a lot. Then I spent some time teaching people how to play Grim Masquerade, which was awesome. Late Wednesday night, this was a super long day. So Tuesday night, I stayed at this guy's villa, but I slept on cushions on the floor. It wasn't great. Yeah. And then we got up, and then we went to the convention, played games all day long, tons of games, meeting people, going to the exhibition hall. I really liked the exhibition hall at Dice Tower Con because it was smaller than a normal one, so I felt like I could finish it. You know what I mean?
What was that about fear of missing out there?
Yeah. And then we play games all day long, and then at the very last thing that we sat down to play, it started at 11 o'clock at night. Bad idea was Castles of Burgundy.
Oh, man.
So I finally played Castles. It took us 2.5 hours to finish this game. Because even the guy who taught it, it was like his second time playing.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's a solid game. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why Ellen Kirby is like insane about it, or our friends who live across town, why they're insane about it. Like, it's a good game. It's fine.
Yeah.
And you know, you should play it sometime.
Sure.
We should play it with our friends across town. It didn't blow me away. Then Thursday came along. Thursday was the day that I said, I'm going to hit the exhibition hall. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to do all the schmoozing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't play a ton of games on Thursday, but I did play 3 great games. All 3 of these are really good, and they're all way different from each other.
Okay.
The first one was Slide Quest.
Yes. So I wanted to see this at Origins, and just every time I went by the Blue Orange booth, it was not out there, except for one time when I had like 5 minutes.
Okay, so I'm going to step into the future for a minute. I'm going to tell you that Brandon, who you interviewed at Origins, was doing the thing at Dice Tower Con. We get to talk a lot, and it was great. He was sold out of everything by like Saturday morning. Like, he had nothing left. Like, he was like, I have one demo copy of Mackie Stack. I'm going to just leave it here. And like, there was no point in him being in the booth. He had nothing to sell. Which is awesome. I mean, good for Blue Orange, right? A little bit of missed opportunity maybe, but good for them to be able to sell everything. Slide Quest is just so much fun. You are controlling a knight who basically has a marble in his butt.
And he's basically rolling around on like a big ball bearing, right?
Yeah, he is. He absolutely is. This is Labyrinth. Remember the game Labyrinth,
mm-hmm.
where you have the little dials in your...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's Labyrinth, but with a little bit of a like pseudo plot around it. And instead of controlling dials... The box has little notches. You take the cover off, and the bottom of the box has these little notches, and there's 4 of these levers that you put on all 4 sides.
So you've got levers you can lift up each side with.
Yes, and then you sit the board on top of that.
Sure.
And the actual plastic piece that houses the board is it's all holes. There's probably, I don't know, 25, 30 holes in this thing. It's probably 8x8, so 60 holes. I don't know what it is. But anyway, it's all holes, and then there's 20 different boards that you can put on this thing.
Right.
To actually go through the game. The conceit is that it's 4 sets of 5 boards, and you do 5 boards and you're done, blah, blah, blah. Well, we didn't really pick up on that. So we went from board 1 to board 19.
Okay.
And we were at full health until we got to 19, and we didn't make it to 20.
I see.
So every time you fall in a hole or you push a guy into the wrong hole or something like that, you lose a life. We just couldn't do 19. It was just brutally difficult.
So you did them all in a row.
Oh, yeah.
1 through 19.
Oh,
and
yeah.
19 just destroyed you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
19 is crazy because every hole is exposed.
It's oh, wow.
Nuts. It is nuts. But the game is a ton of fun. I would say I don't know if I can recommend doing more than 5 boards at a time.
Sure.
Because it's like, I mean, the game is fun, and there's a lot of whoa, 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 and all this stuff, and you got to be careful. But it becomes a grind. I mean, it does. Like, you know,
stop and do something else.
Did you ever watch, like, Texas Hold'em, where, you know, somebody goes all in, and then they stand up, and they're, like, walking around nervously because they can't, like, we would finish a board, and we'd be like, all right, I got to take a walk, and we'd, like, walk around the table. our friend Chris McLaughlin was like dabbing sweat off his brow kind of thing. It was intense.
Oh my goodness.
But it was actually funny because for the first probably 10 boards, like, he would take the knight off at the end and we'd give the knight a little high five. Like,
that's
we
adorable.
Did it, knight. It was pretty cute. And then I finally got a chance to play Teotihuacan.
Yes, you told me how much you had been looking forward to it and hoping you would get a chance.
Right. This is not a game that you would ever play with me.
Nope.
It is marginally less complicated than Zolkin.
Yeah, unlikely.
But, I mean, it's the same. Like,
but I'm really glad for you that you got a chance to play it.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a game I'm going to buy because I'll never play it at home. So I had a lot of fun playing this game. I'm glad I learned how to play this game. I can definitely sense the DNA of Zulkin in this game.
Mm.
There's just something really neat about the gears in Zulkin, and it makes me like Zulkin a little bit more. It's not that it's more complicated that I like it more.
The gears are really neat.
It's a really cool mechanic. But I did get a chance to play Teotihuacan. I got demolished.
Okay.
I mean, it was my learning game. Everybody else had played it before. And then finally, on Thursday, I played a game called Las Vegas. Now, if you want to talk about something that's totally different. So we started with a dexterity game in Slide Quest. We moved to Teotihuacan, which is medium to heavyweight Euro. I mean, it's medium weight, really.
Sure.
It's not heavyweight, but it leans that way. And then we move on to Las Vegas, which is a game that it's just this fast-moving dice rolling game where you roll some dice and you have to allocate one of the number sets that you roll out of these six dice onto like one of five different stacks of money.
Okay.
Right. And everybody does this around, and then you take whatever you have left and you roll the rest of them and you have to allocate to a stack of money. Well, actually, once anybody has allocated a certain number to a stack, like that's the number for that stack.
Sure.
And I mean, it's chance cube game. It's total luck. It's just this fast moving game where you're rolling some dice, you're throwing some stuff on there. But, you know, as it goes around, you can say, you know what, I don't have any good combinations here, so I'm just going to like take this one die and like burn it on this set because at least I lose less dice that way. And I know I'm not going to win it anyway. And so as you go around, people roll and then, you know, they can kind of like snatch something out from somebody who has been in the lead on that stack for the whole round.
Sure, sure.
Right? And all of a sudden, you're like, they roll and it's like, oh, four sixes, boom. It's like, ah, right?
Yeah.
So it's a pretty light game. It's not super complicated. Very easy to play. It's the kind of game that would super frustrate our kids.
Sure.
But it's just fun. You know, there's not a lot of depth to it. And the theme was kind of pasted on, so whatever.
Sure.
Then I got into, like, heavy game playing. Friday and Saturday were my heavy game playing days, which isn't to say I played heavy games, but some of them were a little bit involved. So Friday morning, lots of games played. But the first thing I did was I got to sit down with Mandy Hutchinson, BG Pinup.
Mm-hmm.
And she taught a group of people how to play Prêt-à-Porter, 3rd edition. So this is a game designed by Ignacy Trzewicz. I think that's how you say his name. I don't know. That focuses on the world of fashion. It's a worker placement resource management game about running your own fashion house.
Presumably it has something to do with the ready-to-wear business as opposed to haute couture.
Yes.
Because that's where the name comes from.
Right.
Prêt-à-Porter is French for ready-to-wear.
Right. So the conceit of this game is that you are designing clothes, and then I think three or four times there's like scoring rounds. So you have to gather resources, buy threads. You have a specialty in a certain type of clothing, and then you have a fashion show, and you can sell your sets of clothing that you've completed with all the threads at the fashion show to gather money. And pretty much everything becomes victory points at the end of the game. So the combination of PR and money and quality tokens and something else, they all become victory points at the end of the game. But this is it's a really nice medium weight worker placement resource management game with a unique theme. I don't see this theme really at all. I mean, I think of like Rococo is a game about making dresses, but it's not the fashion industry. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a rumor, or I guess it's something that Ignacy said himself, that they were considering reskinning this game with the video game industry for the 3rd edition.
Huh.
Which would have been really interesting. And I don't know why you would call it ready to wear anymore. But ultimately, they made the decision not to do that and to stick with the fashion theme. And I think that's great because I think a video game theme, it really would have been lost. I don't think that it would have stood out the same way that this game does. And it was really cool. I think there's still some stuff that's getting kind of worked out. It's active on Kickstarter right now. The goal was 35,000. It's at almost 230,000 now. So, I mean, this game is getting made, right? It's Portal Games. There's really no chance that this isn't going to come out. It's an established designer. Mandy has been giving her feedback about some things that she didn't really care for with the game. And there's some weird stuff. But it's really neat. It's really cool to have to figure out, oh, I have to get thread and I have to get a PR person and I have to do all these things and I have to complete my designs. And I mean, ultimately, it's pretty standard stuff. It's worker placement, it's resource management, it's set collection. Sure. And it's a good reminder, and I was talking to Mandy about this afterwards, that fashion, just like anything else, is a business. And you have to do all the business things. You're just doing them with different stuff. You're doing them with designs, and you're doing them with, you know, materials and stuff like that, instead of doing it with marketing or doing it with, you know, all the things that you would do in air quote business, right? So it's a little bit different in that way, but it's a business. Let's see. I taught a friend of ours how to play role player, which was awesome because it was role player. We played vanilla role player. Derek Funkhauser brought Fiends and Familiars, and I could not connect with him to get it, so I did not get to play it, which super bummed me out. But that's okay. I was having a great time. I played a lot of this game called Unmatched.
Okay.
So Unmatched is a Restoration Games title. It is a remake of, I think it's called Star Wars Epic Duels.
Okay.
And I love this game. I love it. It is a super fast two-player battle game. I mean, you can play it in teams, so you can play it four-player. But the core of the game is a two-player battle game. And there's a starter set which comes with, let's see if I can remember this, probably not, Sinbad, Alice, King Arthur, Medusa, and I don't remember who the sixth character is. It doesn't really matter. These characters are wildly different from each other. They all have unique special powers. The board is very simple. Your move is very simple. You have a movement, and you do an action. You can move twice, or you can play two cards. If you move, I think movement is you draw a card, and then you move. And then playing a card out of your hand is an action. And that's it. That's your turn.
Okay.
It's just a battle. It's a battle between you and your opponent. There's ranged or melee attackers. Ranged is super simple. You look at the circle you're standing on. What color is it? You can shoot anything in that range, on that color.
Cool.
Super simple.
I like that kind of simplicity.
The game is mega straightforward. There's an additional pack which has Robin Hood and like Sasquatch or something like that in it. And they mix in perfectly fine. I played with Robin Hood and every character has like a helper, except Bruce Lee. He's special.
He is special.
Yeah. So Robin Hood has his merry men. And so there's four of these like helper tokens. They all have one hit point each. That you can navigate as part of your movement. So when you play a move, every single one of your pieces can move. And I was playing against Alice, I want to say, where Robin Hood is ranged and all of his merry men are melee. And I actually pinned Alice, so she couldn't move.
Oh.
Because you can move through your own pieces, but not other pieces. And so I pinned Alice, and I was shooting at Alice with Robin Hood while doing melee attacks with my merry men.
Mm.
And it was cool. Alice's unique ability, so she's got the Jabberwock, a single helper, but the Jabberwock had 8 hit points, so kind of a beefy, you know, assistant. But the cool thing about Alice was that Alice could change size. If Alice was big, she had +2 attack. If Alice was small, she had +1 defense. And a lot of her cards that you would play to do special abilities would end with change size, and you'd have to flip the size.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And so Medusa was a fairly weak character. But in certain situations, if she turned you to stone, she would deal, like, game-ending damage to you.
Mm.
Right? And then Bruce Lee, a friend of mine played against me with Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee's character doesn't do a ton of damage and isn't super powerful. But if he successfully attacks, he gets to draw a card and take another action. Mm. And so he just keeps attacking you and attacking you and over and over. And it's like death by 1,000 cuts.
Sure.
Right. The game is super fast. If you know what you're doing, you're playing a game in 10, 15 minutes. It's not the kind of game where you feel like all hope is lost when the game is over because it's so quick.
Sure.
Right. There's tons of room for expansion in this game. I'm sure they're going to come out with a lot of new characters. I just love how simple this is. This is a game that, I mean, this could replace a game like Dice Throne because you just sit down and you plop your pieces down and you go.
Sure.
It's a lot of fun. I really, really like that. That was Unmatched from Restoration Games. I also played some Tiny Towns, because why not?
Because Tiny Towns.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I ended the night, this was getting pretty late, this was a little bit after midnight again, with Die Tavernen im Tiefenthal.
You got to play the Taverns of Tiefenthal?
I did.
All right.
Did you see this at Origins?
Yeah, Bruce showed it to me.
Oh, cool. Okay. So this is another game from Wolfgang Warch, who's the Quacks of Quedlinburg guy. And this is basically a game where you own a brew house, you own a tavern, and you have to manage all the different parts of having a tavern. I would say, I mean, it's a nice light to middleweight Euro. There's a lot of things that you look at and you're like, that's the same artist probably as Quacks, and some of the board stuff is similar.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stand out the way Quacks does. Quacks is very unique in its simultaneous bag drafting and all that stuff. Like, Quacks really stands out. This just felt like another Euro.
Okay.
So I like the theme. I mean, it's kind of fun. There's a lot of flexibility in this game. There's modules
that
you can choose to play with or not play with.
The board is very modular.
Yeah. But I got to be honest with you, like, I don't know why you wouldn't just play with them all the time. Like, it doesn't really seem to me like there'd be a whole lot of benefit to not doing some of the pieces. Like, if you don't want to upgrade stuff, just don't upgrade it. You're fine. Sure. There's this whole, like, monk track thing, which I felt was generally superfluous. I won, but I was so tired, and the whole game's in German.
Yeah.
It's possible I didn't actually win, is all I'm going to... You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it was fine. But the whole game is based on getting reputation. And so you're doing things to become a more popular tavern owner.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a fair amount of fun as well. Then we move into Saturday. Saturday was my other big game-playing day. I played more Quacks. I played more Tiny Towns. I introduced a friend of ours to Baron Park.
Oh, nice.
So that was a lot of fun. I played Century Golem Edition.
Nice.
Introduced some people to that as well. I learned how to play Planet from Blue Orange Games. So Brandon actually sat down and taught us how to play Planet.
Nice.
Planet is a game where you have a dodecahedron.
Yes.
This is a game where you are basically drafting different magnetic tiles, hexagons, to put onto your planet. And then at the end of each round, certain things score. So everybody has a planet type, and you score points by having a certain number of tiles on your planet that represent your planet type.
So the tiles are pentagons. Each pentagon has five little triangles in it. So you might have three triangles of ice and two of green grass type area.
And so at the end of the game, you look up. So, like, I was the Earth planet, and so I had to count all the Earth triangles I had on my entire board.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what amount of them, I got a certain number of points. Also, there's, like, scoring with each round where it says who has the biggest area of Earth that doesn't touch ice, or who has the most separate areas of grassland or whatever. And they would win these animal cards. And those animal cards were worth victory points at the end of the game, too. And basically, that's the gist of the game. You're kind of creating these puzzles of how do I take these pieces and put them together? Because you can always see all of the scoring for the entire game. It's all out.
Right. You can't see all the tiles that are going to come out, but you can see what the scoring is going to be. Yeah.
So it's a really interesting, puzzly game. It's a little bit hard to get your hands around and count everything and stuff like that, but it was a lot of fun. That was Planet from Blue Orange Games. Then I played a game called, are you ready for this? Chopstick Dexterity Mega Challenge 3000.
That's an interesting name.
Okay.
I'm guessing you had to pick things up with chopsticks.
Yes. So everybody gets a bowl, and there's a center bowl with all these different pieces in it. You flip over a tile, it has a color and one of the, like, three shapes. And it's a mad rush to get all of the pieces of that color and all of the pieces of that shape into your bowls. So, you know, like the purple and the green and the orange shrimp and all of the purples, right? So it's the cross section. And then whoever has the purple shrimp, which is what you flipped over, breaks ties, basically.
Okay.
And that's it. And you win the tiles. And whoever has the most tiles at the end wins, or first to five, or however you want to do it. But it's ridiculous.
Okay.
And then finally, I played a game called Freight Cars. This is a game that's going to be on Kickstarter soon. This is a game. Remember how I said Ben will return to the story?
Yes.
It's Ben's game.
Okay.
He signed it with Quick Simple Fun last year, and he didn't know when it was coming to Kickstarter. He knew they were working on it until he opened to the centerfold of the Dice Tower Con program, and boom, there it was, right in the middle with a picture of Freight Cars.
Nice.
So I get to play it with the creator. It's a good, lightweight game.
Okay.
It's kind of a polyomino game.
Cool.
It's fun. I blew through Saturday for you because I know we're going a little long. On Sunday, I played a game called Detective Club, which is basically a cross between Dixit and Spyfall.
Okay.
That's it. It's almost a Mysterium-like cross between Dixit and Spyfall.
All right.
That's the best way that I can explain it. It was a lot of fun. That's also from Blue Orange. I played a game called Paranormal Detectives. This is a game that isn't out yet. It's going to be out. It's going direct to retail from Lucky Duck Games.
Mm-hmm.
This is a much less violent version of a game like Mysterium, where one person plays the ghost, and you're kind of asking questions, okay. And you're playing a card. And those cards can be things like, mime what happened, or draw a picture on my back with your finger, or make okay. a sound, or these kinds of things. It does deal with murder or death, so there can be some darkness there. But I talked to them specifically about how do you play this with kids and those kinds of things, and they said that there's a few cards that are going to potentially involve some like really adult things like adultery or something like that. And they're actually going to say like explicit warning on them, which will help if you want to play this with kids, because I think you could. I really do think you could play this with kids, at least kids that are old enough to understand like people die. It's a thing that happens. That you could take those cards out of the game and not play with those cards. So
sure.
This is a game that I actually would like to take a look at as the family gamers, even though it does deal with death. Because okay. It wasn't like a humorous look at death, but it wasn't like super heavy.
Well, you're talking to a ghost about how they died.
Yep. So it's right. Basically a race between detectives to figure out how this ghost died.
Okay. So we're talking like YA level or
I think so.
If we were talking a book, this would be like YA or maybe even what they call middle grade, which mm-hmm. is where our kids are now, reading level wise. Right. So
the one game that I played, I was the one who won, and I deduced that a girl was picking berries in the forest and a hunter accidentally shot her in the leg and she bled out.
Okay, yeah.
Right. So that's what happened there. So it wasn't like super nefarious, like creepy, whatever. I don't know.
Sure.
And then I played a game called Arrail. I think that's how you say it. It's Arrail.
Arrail? I don't know.
I'm not really sure. Anyway, this is a game where there's like a... The conceit is that you are hosting a party. And there's a center dial, and there's some cards that are on the dial. And the cards are more or less Tetris pieces. But the way... Remember how Saikatsu, depending on what interaction you had with the board, you saw things slightly differently?
Mm-hmm.
This is similar. So it's up to a four-player game. Everybody puts their board up against this center spinning thing. And so whatever position the pieces are relative to your board is the way that you see them.
Okay.
If I'm looking at these pieces, you're on the other side of the board from me. For us... Well, all the pieces are pretty much parallel, so they're going to look very similar, but the people to our right and left are going to see rotated versions of those things.
Sure.
And so, on your turn, you can either rotate this dial or pull a card off the dial. Mm-hmm. You get three actions. So you can rotate twice, pull one card off, rotate once, pull two cards off, pull all three cards off. There's sure. only three cards on it. And then, you know, you replace them, and there's things that tell you how to orient. The pieces are all different colors. If you create a grouping on your board that is at least two pieces, you get a meeple of that color. And there's some other mechanics involved where there's couple meeples, where it's basically two meeples glued together. They're very cute.
Aww.
But they're also players. So they go to the biggest party. So if somebody exceeds your size party of red or blue or yellow, then that couple meeple is going to go to the biggest one.
Okay.
And then there's another mechanic that involves, because they can't make rows disappear because it's a physical board, there's a mm-hmm. there's a thing that moves up as you complete rows, which effectively does the same thing. And you okay. get extra additional points for doing those things. I think I agree with the person who told me it's a little bit better than Bricks, but I did enjoy both of those games.
Okay.
So I look forward to playing that. I have a copy of it and I brought it home.
Cool.
Finally, I did pick up a copy of Draftosaurus.
Yeah, so I
You've
held
been
off.
Itching to talk about this. Because you knew I picked it up.
Yeah. So I held off talking about it in my Origins wrap up. But man, I got to play Draftosaurus a couple of times at the demo table they had. And by the time I was interested in picking a copy up, they were sold out. So I mentioned it to you, and I am so happy that you got a copy. And we have played it with the kids several times already.
Mm-hmm. We have. So we do have a copy of this for review, but I will say this, it's great. It's Sushi Go with Dinosaurs is awesome. I love it.
Yeah. And I think that might start addressing the first of the questions we got about cons, which is, what were the games you were totally blown away by? I mean, for me, I think it was Draftosaurus and then Shobu.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have Shobu on the list because I had already played it by the time
right.
the con ran around. But I will say, for me, it was... I really liked Slide Quest. I really liked it a lot. I think the kids are going to have a lot of fun with it. It's going to be tough for our five-year-old, but I really, really enjoyed it.
I can't wait to actually get a chance to play it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm also looking forward to Freight Cars coming to Kickstarter. I mean, I know now we're friends with the designer, and so there's kind of, you know, whatever. But I will back it on Kickstarter. I think it's a really solid game.
All right.
So those are going to be the ones that I kind of took out of that.
So we have a follow-up question. What was the best family game from our respective conventions? I think I'm still going to say Draftosaurus for me, although Echidna Shuffle comes in as a very, very close
second. I'm kind of bummed I didn't... I don't know that Dice Archon was big enough for one guy with his game to come to it, but I'm kind of bummed we don't have that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I suspect our kids will get annoyed while they play, but still have fun doing it.
Probably, yeah.
So I guess for me, I guess I'm going to have to say probably still SlideQuest. We did pick up a copy of Dragon's Breath from Haba, but I haven't really had a chance to play that yet.
I did play Dragon's Breath at Origins. One of the nights we went to the Punchboard Media Gathering, which was open to everybody at Origins, and I ended up sitting down with a bunch of folks and playing Fire Tower. I got totally destroyed every single time. And then we ended up pulling out Dragon's Breath that a bunch of the Haba folks had brought a bunch of games along for anybody to play. And we had a lot of fun with that, proving once again that Haba really knows what they're doing. These games, even the ones that look kind of like silly kids games, are just plain fun.
Yeah, I mean, one of the cool things that I got to do at Dice Tower Con was present the award for best family games at the Dice Tower Awards. And Tom Vassell talked a little bit before I presented the award about what a family game was and how the phrase gateway game seems like a drug deal kind of thing. And so,
are you saying board games aren't like drugs?
I mean, it'll keep you off the street. but really, like, it's not so much that it's family games, like kids games, implies kids games, but it's a family weight games. You know, these are games that anybody in the family could play. Like, that's the idea.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I agree.
All right, let's tackle a couple more questions. Our friend Nick, as always, asked, what was the best new food you tried at a convention?
Oh, man. Did I even have much new food at the... I mean, I ate a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah,
because they were cheap.
Yeah. I will admit that almost every day I was at Origins, I went over to North Market, which is... I mean, it's what it sounds like. It was a large building with all these little stalls in it of mostly food. But a few farmers market type things selling like soaps and incense and stuff. And since there were so many different foods to try, I tried different foods every day. But I think my favorite was probably the Indian place I went to on the very first day at the convention.
I also went to an Indian place on my first day at the convention.
I was in a hurry and there was a long line everywhere. And I'm like, I want to get some food quickly, and it would be good if it had some vegetables in it. Indian! Yes, Indian sounds good. Oh, good, and there's not a line, and I got something delicious with, like, potatoes and peas, and I got some naan and a little bit of chicken, and it was all delicious. And the only reason I didn't go back is because I wanted to be strong and try other things.
I went to Disney Springs and had really, really, really good fried chicken.
Okay.
Not a new food, but it was really good.
Okay.
I went to the cupcake place, Sprinkles, I think it is. They have a cupcake vending machine. That was cool.
All right. Sure. We'll tackle one more set of questions related to cons. We got a few more questions that are not specifically about cons, so I'll save those for another day. So the last question for us is, how were these cons suited for families? Were there family days or kid game areas?
Okay.
Good sights to see.
So, first of all, Dice Tower Con was in Orlando. There's a bajillion things to do for kids in Orlando.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
a ton. Just,
if you like mini golf, you're in the right place. But both Dice Tower Con, which is now called Dice Tower East after this year, and Origins have the kids' room. Now, this is something that I had never encountered at any con before, but I think every con in the world needs to have one of these things. For 4 hours a day, you can just drop off your kids. That's amazing.
You say 4 hours a day.
I mean, that's how it was at Dice Tower Con.
I'm literally looking at the one for Origins. Every day that Origins was open, their, what they called critter care, was open from sometime around open until 1, and then 2 until close.
Yeah, bananas.
$4 an hour.
I think the Dice Tower Con one was free.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Is that $4 an hour for all children or for each kid?
$4 an hour per kid.
Yeah, that's still not bad.
That's still a lot cheaper than a babysitter, and it was with screened, background-checked professionals.
Right. That's why it costs $4 an hour.
Right. Day. And a bunch of games, as well as crafts and books and toys, because as we know from our experience, even kids who love playing games will probably get burnt out on playing games a lot sooner than adults will.
Right. One of the things I liked about the one at Dice Tower Con was that you can actually go in and play with your kids.
Sure.
I mean, it's not a huge convention, and it's going to be a smaller convention next year. It's going to be right around 2,000 people, probably. But you can go in, and you can play with your kid for an hour and be like, hey, I'll be back in a couple of hours. You can play some games. You can go get in a nice, heavy game, and then go back and pick your kids up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's enough time in there that you have those opportunities to have some kid-free time, even if you're trying to enjoy the convention with your children.
Yeah. Well, and I have to say, the people who spoke most highly of the Origins childcare program were people who had come to exhibit, to show off their games, but where working on the game was a family affair. So, right. You know, husband, wife, and their kids came. And yes, kids are going to help out at the booth some of the time, but you don't want to leave them stuck there 4 days in a row all day long.
Yeah.
So at least two different sets of parents told me, yeah, my kids keep asking if they could just spend all day in the childcare room. And I had to tell them no, but I'm glad they like it.
Right. Yeah, it's good stuff.
It's really nice that that's there. I mean, obviously, neither of us went to these conventions with our kids this time around, but man, it makes me wish for something like that at PAX Unplugged or at some of the smaller conventions that we go to locally.
Right. I mean, I can understand how it would be difficult to provide some of those services because the other conventions are really small.
Yes.
So, you know, Granite Game Summit, which is a convention that I love, is probably less than a quarter of the size of Dice Tower.
Oh, yeah.
So it would be really difficult to provide that.
I get why they don't do it, but it would be totally awesome if they could.
Right.
Origins also had a thing specifically to reach out to families who deal with autism.
Mm-hmm.
They call it the Sensory Friendly Gaming Room. Was partnered up with a charity called Path of Play. They had times a day that they were open for everybody, but it was specifically geared for folks with autism. They had both a number of different family board games and a little bit of pinball and video games as well, because some folks with autism do a lot better when they've got that sort of screen where they can just get that focus in and then be ready to step away from it and move on to something else.
Sure. That makes sense. Dice Tower Con had, like, the Pitch Car Kids Championship. Pitch Car, which is kind of fun. And there's a lot of panels and things like that that they can go to. Although, I think Tom said that he's going to really cut down on those for the next year. So,
okay.
Those probably will not be there anymore. But I just think that Critter Care or Kids Care or whatever, you know, you want to call that, is a really awesome addition to the convention feel. And one of the things I like about Dice Tower Con, it's so low-key, and people are so nice. There's a huge library that you have access to. You know, with a lot of cons, I feel bad taking time out of the convention schedule to go do something else.
Yes.
And I really didn't feel that way with Dice Tower Con. With Dice Tower East starting next year, the convention center is actually attached to a mall.
Okay.
So you can just go do stuff in the mall if you want to, without even getting in your car and going somewhere.
Hmm.
So that's another really nice feature of Dice Tower East. It's going to be coming next year.
Cool. Well, I think that's probably plenty for this edition of the Family Gamers Podcast.
Sure is.
But in case you haven't had enough, you could always reach out to us online.
Yep. There's lots of different ways you can do that. The easiest way is to find us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Family Gamers AA.
Or you could join the other folks who were asking us questions about our con experience at the Family Gamers Facebook community. The easiest way to get there is thefamilygamers.com/community.
You can always email us, Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com. You can send us weird food.
You're not going to let this go until something shows up in the mail, are you?
I don't know. I sometimes enjoy watching you make a fool out of yourself.
All right. If you would like to send me something weird to eat, and it has to be something that's a real food, you can send it to
The Family Gamers, P.O. Box 528, Auburn, Massachusetts, 01501.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcast or whatever your podcast subscription source is.
Pause and do it right now.
Please!
Come on! You can do it!
Also, please check out our Pod Pledge. Go to thefamilygamers.com/podpledge to see a video of our family. We talk about what we do. You can sign up to get like Christmas cards and birthday cards and all this cool stuff. You can become part of the Family Gamers family.
Thanks again to our sponsor for this episode, Breaking Games. fill the sky with stars and catch them as they shoot. In the stars align from breaking games, players take turns spotting their color of stars in the sky by playing constellation cards to the map. Once the sky is full of stars, they start to twinkle or flip to the reverse color. When the same color stars create a line across the night sky, they shoot and disappear. The first stargazer to catch 5 shooting stars is the winner. Find out who's the best stargazer in your family by picking up the game from BreakingGames.com.
All right, and I think that's going to be it for us this week. So until next week, everybody,
play games with your kids.